NASA Plus. Our story opens with a time lapse of the night sky. Christine Malick.
Ever since I can remember, I've been interested in thinking about the stars and thinking about the universe and how it's put together. As a blind person, my in for knowing about that was to read science fiction or to watch space documentaries on TV.
You are about to take a journey out of this world.
An old science fiction film plays with a rocket launching.
When a sighted person looks up at the night sky,
the full moon appears.
There's a visceral connection, I think, that people feel to the universe around us.
We see stars in the night sky, and as the Westerland 2 sonification begins, a wavy line sweeps across a star cluster.
For me, sonifications are the way that I get to have that visceral sensory experience of the universe.
People with headphones listen to exoplanet sonification.
Sonifications are life-changing for me.
NASA Plus presents The Outer Reaches of Our World. Translated into sound. Making space an experience for all.
I get to have that experience of the universe.
We zoom out of a galaxy and the title comes up.
Listen to the universe.
Dr. Kimberly Arcand, visualization scientist.
Data sonification in its simplest form is just the translation of information that we can see into something that we can hear. It's this idea of extrapolating out that information into sound.
Data sonification is defined using text. Sonification, the act or process of producing sound from data.
My name is Kimberly Arcand, and I'm a visualization scientist and emerging tech lead for NASA's Chandra X Observatory. All that means is that I get to take data from our universe and tell a scientific story with it.
A bright disk with polar jets emanating from a central pulsar is prominent in the Crab Nebula image. As three wavy lines, representing three bands of energy, sweep left to right, putting image and sound together in space-time. The scene switches to Kim, speaking at a conference.
In this case, I'm sticking with my good friend Cassiopeia A, this beautiful exploded star. And what we've done is we've used the sliced data with the silicon, the sulfur, the calcium, the iron, and the high energy, and mapped each different layer to a different sound, a different tone. We worked with people who are blind or low vision to make sure that they could extrapolate their own meaning. If you are just listening to this object, that the scientific story would still be communicated in a way that made sense and that was also pleasing. And then we test again, because we don't want anything that's gonna hurt people's eardrums, not make sense. If it's too fast, for example, if it's too slow.
Kim listens through headphones.
But it is like when you're making images, there's, you know, choices to be made.
We see a sonification of MSH 1552, a hand-shaped pulsar wind nebula.
Sonification is important because it gives us a different way to experience and perceive information.
A bright orange speckled area is denoted with sounds like popcorn popping. Matt Russo, astrophysicist, musician, system sounds.
And in particular, it's very important for people who are blind or visually impaired because it gives them access to information they wouldn't otherwise have.
The jellyfish nebula sonification shows a jellyfish shape in a sea of stars. The Cassiopeia A sonification shows a supernova remnant with circles emanating from the center.
So the idea is to convert relations or features in data into something we can hear, like the changing pitch of a note or the changing volume. It turns out that it's not just people who are blind or visually impaired that find value and meaning in these sonifications. They're popular almost universally with the general public.
V404 Cygni, light echoes from a black hole.
And perhaps that's because they help people connect something that's far away and unfamiliar in astronomy with something that's deeply personal and emotional, such as music.
The Stefan's Quintet sonification shows five galaxies in close proximity, appearing as a butterfly in shape in several wavelengths of light. Kim Arcand.
So with all of this type of data that we're getting from these various NASA telescopes, we have to translate it from something humans can't easily naturally detect into something we can either see or hear or even perhaps touch. So it's this process of translating information from one form to another. And when we're doing that, we can create a visualization, or we can create a sound, or we can create something that could be 3D printed, for example, so that we could touch it. But it's kind of the idea of, you know, if you're speaking French and you need to translate into Mandarin, you're just taking that information and you're just moving it into another form. So it's just another way of understanding.
Christine on stage.
For me, the process of getting to know a sonification is it's demanding and rewarding, and it takes time, because instead of just looking at an image and maybe reading a caption and then listening, I want to read through what each sound means.
The Ara Quarii sonification shows crisscrossed material of varying wavelengths. The Galactic Center sonification shows stars and filaments at the center of the Milky Way galaxy.
The way the sound is panned gives a lovely, sweeping sense that the image is big, or at least what the image is referencing is big. And so this one is very rich. The listening experience, even if you just listen to it not knowing what it was, it's a lovely, lingering, meandering sort of melodic listening experience. And then when you add in the meanings, it becomes so much richer and more meaningful, more important.
Earth is shown from space, then a cartoon solar system.
Most of what we're looking at in the universe is in a light or type of light that humans can't naturally detect.
Cartoon lights shine upward from Earth toward assorted space telescopes.
I like to think of these telescopes that are up in space as just being, you know, kind of super friends, right, with their various superpowers. And Chandra's superpower is to look at really energetic regions, really hot regions of space. But what's really helpful is to be able to look at the entire universe with a different set of eyes, looking at many different kinds of light. So for example, though Chandra looks in X-ray light, there are other telescopes that look in infrared light, like the James Webb Space Telescope or the recently retired Spitzer Space Telescopes. Hubble looks at optical light and also little bits of ultraviolet and infrared light as well. There are radio telescopes, gamma ray telescopes, and the whole point is you need all of these different kinds of telescopes to be able to fit in the various pieces of the puzzle.
The Perseus Galaxy Cluster is shown in different wavelengths of light.
The Perseus Cluster of Galaxies is this beautiful system hundreds of millions of light years away from us, where it's a cluster of galaxies that has a very high-powered, supermassive black hole at its core. And what Chandra found back in 2003 was that that black hole is essentially burping out into the hot gas around it. And what that burping into the hot gas is doing is causing pressure waves, which are sound waves.
The Perseus image shows irregular concentric rings of matter and sound waves around a bright black hole.
The image itself shows hot gas glowing around this galaxy cluster. It's not true that there is no sound in space. In some cases, like in this galaxy cluster, there's enough ambient gas surrounding the galaxies that sound can travel through it. And because these ripples are visible in the image, we were able to extract their shape and resynthesize a sound.
The Perseus sonification is shown, turning the X-ray data into sound.
The black hole is essentially creating a sound. It is a B-flat about 57 octaves below middle C. So I love to sort of think that there are black holes out there, like these divas in the universe, you know, singing this really, really deep, deep song. Because 57 octaves below middle C is hundreds of keyboards too low for humans to hear.
So I dug back into the research, and I found images showing these ripples much more clearly.
And then I spent a long time learning how to cleanly extract those waves. I knew it was something special.
Andrew Santaguida, programmer, musician, system sound.
In a way, it's a very accurate sonification because the sound wave we're recreating came from the black hole.
I did not expect it to go viral at all. We had released it for NASA's Black Hole Week. It was on the news, and that was lovely. And then on a slow news Sunday in August, a colleague at NASA Exoplanets just tweeted about it, and for some reason, it just caught on fire. And by the end of it, it was like almost 2 billion people had seen or, you know, come across the story.
People listening, reading.
And that just blew me away.
Gaseous matter close to a black hole is shown emanating from a dusty disk. Christine Malik, arts and culture consultant.
That was very windy and gusty, and so there was less of a sense of discrete phenomena like stars or galaxies and more of a sense of movement.
A radial line continues to sweep in a clockwise circle over the Perseus cluster, playing its pixels as sounds.
Because the sound in this is so uncommon that it gave me a little bit of that creepiness where you start to get the sense of your own minuscule tininess when trying to comprehend big, huge forces like that.
News headlines read, NASA astronomers make noises in space audible to the human ear.
It was so exciting that a project that we had started during the pandemic as a way to connect with a community resonated, pun intended, I guess, with a much wider part of our planet.
Drone footage over lush mountains. Dr. Wanda Diaz, astrophysicist, is shown on stage giving a TEDx talk.
Nowadays, nature feels. It feels as if all nature serenades with a mystic melody. And then it gets better. The spectacle gets better as I hear how galaxies arch across the celestial dome. What happens is that the information that the satellites gather is light. And usually, people like me who dedicate their lives to physics and astronomy, etc., convert that light, that information gathered by the satellites, into numbers. And those numbers can be converted into a sound.
So I have a very dear friend, Dr. Wanda Diaz. She is an astronomer and a computer scientist, and she's been blind since she was a teenager. She was really my inspiration. That's how I first learned of data sonification. She has told me these stories of how she would be in math class at university and her professor would just be writing equations on a board and she could not access that information.
Handwrites with chalk on a board. Wanda's TED Talk audience members don blindfolds to listen to solar flare data.
So for her to study the stars, she relies on data sonification so that she can translate that information to something she can hear and therefore process and therefore study. So for her, data sonification is an actual step of scientific research.
Solar flares erupt from the sun. Text on screen instructs the viewer, close your eyes and listen.
Sound effectively increases the sensitivity of people to signal detection. And I think it's crucial that the training begins in school. Let's not leave out people with disabilities.
Blind students' hands touch astronomical models. The scene switches to a wide field view of a galaxy with exoplanets depicted by circles and sounds. Christine speaks first from stage and then in a meeting with Matt, Andrew, and Kim.
Even if we're not scientists, I think that that curiosity or that awe or that attempt to understand the cosmos and infinite space, I think that's something that all humans have in common.
It's kind of like listening to a poem in a language you don't know. Because if you're not a scientist, those concepts are, I won't say foreign, but they're just not in your everyday parlance. They're not things you deal with every day. So it's dense. There's so much to take in.
Worth the effort though, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's so rewarding.
The Galactic Center sonification is shown in X-ray data. Matt and Andrew work in their studio.
I first met Matt and Andrew from System Sounds at a visualization conference that we had all attended a couple years before the pandemic, and I really admired their work.
System Sounds is a science art outreach project. So the basic idea is that we take data from space and convert it into music and sound for outreach, to inspire, to educate, and to make space more accessible.
We just decided to work together to try a few of these data sonifications based on Chandra data and to see what happened. Because I really suspected that, you know, with over two decades of operation, we have this treasure trove of a data archive with Chandra and with other telescopes from NASA as well. And we just started playing. We started experimenting with translating this information into new sounds, new ways of knowing.
Matt and Andrew work with sonification data on computers. Kim works on processing an image on a computer.
So the first time that I heard a completed piece all the way through, it was of the Galactic Center, this sort of inner 400 light year region around Sagittarius A star, our very own supermassive black hole. And it's this wonderful, dense, busy, active, downtown region of the Milky Way, right? There's exploding stars, there are these X-ray binaries, there are these beautiful loops of material, all these massive stars. There's so much going on. It's kind of like a Times Square, right? And I'm so used to that data and understanding it visually that the first time I heard the sound, there were things in the data set that I had never really noticed before.
For the Galactic Center, we started by looking at it, looking at what the data looks like, what are the patterns, and the important thing is to find out what's the story we're going to tell. It was a beautiful multi-wavelength image, so it had layers of recorded light, of optical, infrared, and X-ray light all combined into one.
The Galactic Center image and sonification are shown in various wavelengths and combined.
In most cases, the sonification results in music that is not humanly playable by anyone, and so we have to use computers and synthetic instruments to bring this music to life. But there are some examples where we actually do some real recording.
An ensemble plays a composition of the Galactic Center.
We assign each telescopic instrument to a musical instrument, so they had different qualities of sound.
Piano, crotalis, marimba, flute, clarinet, violin, cello, bass drum.
One very common question I get when talking about the sonification project is from musicians who ask, can we play this data ourselves? So that was the next goal, to get sheet music into the hands of musicians.
Ensemble Éclat plays Where Parallel Lines Converge, composer Sophie Kastner's sonic rendering of the Galactic Center sonification. Andrew Santaguida.
I grew up in Toronto, and I've been interested in music for my whole life. I started playing piano when I was like 5 years old. Eventually, I went to an arts high school, and that's where I met Matt, who is the other half of System Sounds.
High school rock band performs in a club with full lighting and dancing audience.
Andrew is by far my longest friend. We met in grade 9 when I was 13. We just happened to sit next to each other in chemistry class, and then we found out we were also in the same music program at our high school. And years later, after high school, we joined the same band with a few other people from that high school. And so we've been creating music together in some form for a very long time.
7 animated planets orbit a star in the TRAPPIST-1 solar system.
In 2017, Matt and I converted a musical solar system they had found called TRAPPIST-1.
TRAPPIST-1 is a very exciting system of exoplanets. There are 7 Earth-sized planets, all orbiting a nearby red dwarf star. And this system happens to be the most musical solar system ever found, because these 7 planets are locked in an orbital resonance. So it's like they're playing the same song. They're all locked into a rhythm and playing a certain harmony.
The planets' orbits are depicted by colored circular paths around the red dwarf star. The scene switches to a field of colorful dots.
A lot of it's trial and error. You look at what's important to the image, or like what's important to the data. So what's the image about? Is it about how many of something it is, when it happened? We just look at what the story of the image is, find out what sounds can bring that out, and then we just try version after version after version until we get something that represents the data, it sounds like the image looks, but also stands out on its own as a piece of music.
I like that one. I don't know what they were. So the first step is I sit down with Andrew and we look at the data or the image and we think about all the possible different sonification mappings. So we do a lot of sketching and diagrams and really try to do this design stage very slowly and methodically. And then we get into the computer programming, and that can sometimes take a while. From there, we do a bit of music production to put the elements together. And then we send what we have to Kim and also to Christine for their consultation and their feedback.
Christine Malik is amazing. She gives the best feedback we could ask out of anyone. Her insight and her thought process and just how much she loves space and how much she loves the science behind it. Her feedback really does shape a lot of what we do.
Christine, Matt, Andrew, and Kim gather around a computer.
And it gives us a whole new perspective on anything we make.
Christine, Matt, Andrew, and Kim present on stage at the South by Southwest conference.
South by Southwest was a context I never imagined myself participating in. Kim asked if I would attend also.
It was great to be in the same room as Kim and Christine because, as you know, this project started during COVID, and so the three of us were working mainly remotely, and so we all got to be in the same room, and Andrew as well, the four of us.
Do you always listen to the composite first, or do you like to hear
through the layers first and then put it together?
I would listen to the composite first, and then definitely the layers. I always listen to each of the layers.
So here we go. The image associated with the Perseus Galaxy black hole resembles the view down the center of a purple cotton candy funnel cloud.
A large screen at the conference plays the Perseus sonification.
Being there as a panel participant was extremely exciting.
People in the blind community have a slightly different experience of these sonifications, in that for us, it's more directly educational.
So I was super honored. I was very grateful for the opportunity. It was extraordinary.
Thank you again so much for coming. We really appreciate your time.
I came across the opportunity to experience the work of Matt Russo many years ago. We both live in Toronto, and a local blindness organization was promoting a presentation he was giving on the sonification he had done of the TRAPPIST-1 solar system. And I had never heard of sonifications, so I was eager to go. And he gave a sort of multi-sensory presentation at a local little planetarium, and I was completely blown away. I had goosebumps on my goosebumps. I'll never forget the experience, because it was my first direct sensory experience of cosmic phenomenon, and that really got me hooked into how else can me or other members of the blind community experience these phenomena and learn about them more deeply.
The camera zooms into the TRAPPIST-1 solar system and into a close-up of the star as the planets gain orbital speed, and then zooms back out, fades to black. The scene switches to the Carina Nebula image and sonification. The title reads Cosmic Cliffs of the Carina Nebula, which resembles a mountain range made of gas and dust embedded in stars.
In this very modern digital era of astronomy and computer science, binary code is that language that we use to talk to each other. Once we get that binary code, that digital suitcase, it's then unpacked into, say, a table of information. The table of information catalogs the energy, the intensity, all of the location information, the time of every photon, every packet of energy that was captured during the observation. And then from there, it goes down the pipeline to be created into an image, into a sound, into whatnot. Data sonification itself is also not, you know, holding up a big space microphone. It really is just like the image translation part. It is a translation into sound.
One of the most fun steps is that whenever we start a new sonification, I get to kind of put my researcher hat back on. I get to dig into the actual scientific papers and try to understand the scientific story behind the data that I'm looking at, or the image that I'm looking at. And so I still get to kind of flex that muscle a little, and that informs our sonification choices.
My feedback is often about, can we make this pitch a bit higher, or can you choose a different instrument, or could it be oriented this way or that way? So it's, for me, it's informational. It's about how can the sonification be more of an educational tool for someone who's only sensory experience of this phenomenon is going to be the sonification.
And you've also caught a few of our mistakes. stereo
you
panning.
Say this, but yeah. I think, is he telling me the truth, or is he just trying to make
No, we've had some stereo panning issues that you...
issues, and you're listening so carefully that you can tell the sound is supposed to be on the left or the right. It's happened a few times.
Okay.
When I look at images that we've created descriptions of or sonifications of, I have a completely different appreciation for them.
The Pillars of Creation sonification plays, representing an image that looks like cosmic pillars.
And I think anytime any researcher has a new avenue to go down, there's a reward at the end of that street, because it pushes how you process things. It pushes how you understand things. So I'm kind of addicted to it at this point. Like, what else can we do?
The sonification of Tycho's supernova remnant plays.
I think now that blind or low vision kids who see things like image descriptions and sonifications feel more included and feel that they're part of the learning world, and that may be a career path that seems plausible to them in a way that it didn't seem plausible to me. I think that as always happens when you make something more inclusive and accessible for one particular group, you positively affect a lot more people than you think you have.
Galaxy Master 87.
When you take the time to create something of value to one community, oftentimes, you know, that rising tide lifting all boats, well, that's a phrase for a reason, because a lot of other communities have expressed that these types of outputs matter for them as well. That was something that we particularly learned from users who are blind or low vision, that they wanted to make sure it wasn't just, this is a duck in a pond, because that could be done automatically. But being able to capture some of the visual poetry of your data set was really critical.
I'm very happy that we're at a place now where a blind astronomy enthusiast, or even just a blind kid checking stuff out, could go, oh, astronomy, oh yeah, okay, so I can read this image description, I can listen to this sonification, I can maybe touch a 3D print of something. So having all of these access points is a dream come true for a lifelong astronomy lover like me.
The M51 Whirlpool Galaxy is a spiral, cloudy shape, sonified here, showing a radial line sweeping clockwise through the soundscape. Credits roll.
Is the result of this international collaboration of scientists. We are managed by the Marshall Space Flight Center, situated at the Center for Astrophysics. Our colleagues here at the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory and all of our colleagues at the Marshall Space Flight Center and NASA's Universe of Learning. So many people, so many experts that really give their heart and soul into making this data possible and to helping this data get out into the world.